to it. It's another day. It's the 18th day of November 2019. It's a Monday. It's the Daily Daily Caller podcast. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening, downloading, press and play, doing all that good stuff. Thank you so much for spreading the word and writing and reviewing and rating and all that stuff. All that good stuff that you guys do on iTunes and whatever platform you use. I appreciate it. I even read, it's narcissism or insecurity. You can decide which. I read the comments that are posted on the episodes on Ricochet, which distributes the show and helps us grow. So if you're a Ricochet listener and you write a comment, I will I'll likely read it. And then cry quietly to myself over the hatred you spew. Don't you love me? So, yeah, keep doing that. Spreading the word. Share it on social media. You can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. Since we did not have a guest on Friday that I had copies of the book of, I didn't have a book to give away this week. But then I thought, you know, I got a pile of books everywhere. So I do have a book to give away this week. I will give away two signed copies of Jerome Hudson's book, 50 Things They Don't Want You to Know. I have three of them left, I think. Yeah. No, I have at least three. So I can give away two of them this Friday. If you would like to enter, just email Derek at dailycaller.com. Let me know you want to enter. And so it is written, so it shall be done. I like giving away stuff. Christmas is coming, and I want to make sure that I get them out. Plus, there's like a box of them in my house, which is kind of a pain to move around, especially and keep them away from kids, because no matter where you put them, they find a way to get to them, the little buggers. Anyway, so we've got an action-packed program for you today. We'll talk a little bit about Colin Kaepernick coming up. What a loser. Oh, yeah, who doesn't want that guy on their team? We've got Sprite going full LGBTQRSTUVWXYZ down in South America. We've got insanity in New York coming probably soon to a city near you. But we'll start with the latest in Trump derangement syndrome news. But first, let me take a sip of it right now because I'm drinking it. Let's talk about Life Change Tea, the game changer. It's the tea that makes you go, and you think, I don't want to go. What are you doing making me? No, it's different. Look, food used to be different. It used to be not so processed. How much processed food do you eat? How much nutrition do they rob of our food by processing the hell out of it? Well, you don't have to worry about that. Well, you should worry about that, but if you drink Life Change Tea, it'll clean out what's left in you that's stopping you from being able to absorb everything that's good inside of you, and will allow your body to absorb more nutrition. All good things come from your gut. You know, your energy goes in there. Deliciousness goes in there. But bad things come from there, too. Get the bad things out of you. That's where Life Change Tea comes in. All you got to do, don't take my word for it, give it a shot. Give it a one-month shot. One-month supply comes to your door. You brew up a big gallon of it. You sit in your fridge and you drink a glass a day. And then you'll see that you have more energy. You feel better because of the reasons I explained. It cleans you out and your body can absorb the nutrition and the food that you eat. Go to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. You get more energy. I do drink it every day. I'm drinking it right now. I have a new deal for you, though. It's not free shipping. You get 10% off if you enter promo code Derek at checkout. 10%, big 10% off. They got all kinds of things to make you feel better up there. And I suggest you try the Life Change Tea, but go to getthetea.com now and check out whatever you want. Enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout. And you're supposed to get 10% off. 10%, a big 10%. So kudos to them for sticking around. Kudos to you guys for helping us out by ordering their product and reordering their product. The reorders are through the roof because it works. That's the beauty of it. You try it once and you're like, hey, wait a second. Why have I not been doing this all along? All right. The latest in Trump derangement syndrome. In a minute, I'm going to play a clip from Ambassador Maria Yovanovitch, or Yankovic, I guess her name is. I don't know. Yovanovitch. I think it's Yovanovitch. Again, the reason I can't pronounce her name is to illustrate a point, because of course I can pronounce her name. You can't get away from her damn name in the media. The reason I mispronounce her name is to illustrate the fact that we have lived our whole lives and our country has survived its entire history without her, right? Somehow we've managed to do that. Yet if you listened to the Democrats in the hearing last Friday, you'd have to wonder how we managed to do that. This woman, this former ambassador, still an employee of the State Department. She wasn't fired. She wasn't run out of government. She was removed from her post. Her existence, if you just watched the hearing and listened to Democrats talk, is why our country still exists. She is responsible for, she's definitely the greatest living diplomat, but perhaps the greatest diplomat of all time. Benjamin Franklin, get out of the way. Here comes this former ambassador to Ukraine, political appointed to that position, but was a State Department employee, still a State Department employee. The State Department finds her so valuable, so courageous, and so wonderful that they allowed her to take a job as a visiting fellow at Georgetown University. So I don't think she's really actually currently working for the Justice Department or the State Department, even though she's on the State Department payroll. It's sort of an outreach thing. It's a mess as to how that happens. But you would think that somebody this important, this crucial, this genius, this vital to American national security would be out there on the front lines. They wouldn't want to put her in academia. They'd want her out there talking to the people, doing diplomacy, saving this country and this planet from its obvious destruction that we face if she is not involved in it. I'm being sarcastic, of course, but that was the tone and tenor of her, of all the preambles to the testimony, the questions that they had on Friday. Even Republicans, I want to salute you for your service, your courageous service, your wonderful service, you're this, you're that, and maybe she is all of those things, but you got 5 minutes and the clock is running. Stop kissing ass and start asking questions. If you don't have questions, just defer your time or cede your time back or whatever. Yield your time. But the butt kissing just got to be so much. I also, by the way, I didn't know this again until only recently, that apparently Ukraine is crucial, vital to U.S. national security. Again, something you probably didn't know until these hearings came along, that this little podunk country in a place people couldn't find on a map if you offered them a lot of money is perhaps the fulcrum on which the entire fate of the world balances. Listening to everybody up there in the hearing, not just the members of Congress of both sides, but of the witnesses, not just on Friday, but on Wednesday, and I'm sure later today, the importance of Ukraine cannot be overstated. Of course, they all make their money dependent. There's no ambassador in the world, let me just tell you, and there's no State Department employee tasked to a certain region of the country or the world or a certain country out there who go, tell me about what's the issues in your thing. And nobody will go, you know what? There's nothing. Everything's fine. No reason to worry about us. You could close this entire department. It wouldn't even really matter. You wouldn't notice it for 6 to 8 years because there's nothing going on there. It's a boring region of the world where everything is hunky-dory. No, nobody's going to say that. Just like no government bureaucrat, especially a career government bureaucrat, maybe some political appointees, will come out and say, you know what, as deputy undersecretary of insignificant and out-of-date programs in Health and Human Services, let me tell you with absolute authority that you can shut us all down. You could lay off, fire, replace, reassign, whatever you want to do, the 5,000 employees who work in this department, and there is not one human being in this country who will notice. We are spinning our wheels in mud, we're not even really doing that much. We're sitting around playing video games and making dirty jokes to each other as our checks clear every 2 weeks. Nobody's going to say that. But those departments exist. they might say it to each other, but they're never going to say it publicly. And when it comes to Ukraine, we are told that it is vital to our national security interests, our relationship with Ukraine. It is vital to our national security. They never really explain how. Don't get me wrong, it would suck for the Ukrainians if the Russians marched across Ukraine and essentially took over the entire country. No question about it. It would really suck to be a Ukrainian. How that would impact the U.S. directly, I'm not really sure. I can't figure it out. I didn't spend all weekend doing research trying to figure it out. But I thinking about it logically, what would we lose? Is Ukraine a major importer of U.S. goods? Not so much. Are we a major importer of Ukrainian goods that aren't, that are irreplaceable, that aren't ethnic or region-centric or whatever? Not really. They're not a hub of technology. They're not a hub of innovation. They're a hub of corruption. They're a hub of government aid. They're a country that can't really support itself and wouldn't survive without hundreds and hundreds of millions, billions of dollars from the United States and the rest of Europe. Now, for my money, that's not really a super valuable member of the nation state country club. I just don't really, if you're borrowing the dues for that country club all the time, maybe you shouldn't be a member of that country club. I'm not advocating for you Ukrainians out there. I'm not advocating abandoning Ukraine and letting Russia annex it or march through it. Not at all. I'm commenting on the hyper crap that is coming out of the mouths of members of this committee, particularly Democrats, when it comes to the importance of Ukraine, but of all of them when it comes to the importance of the witnesses and how wonderful and patriotic they were. Same thing on Wednesday. You guys have formed a circle of patriotism. You're true patriots. You're out there serving the country. Yeah, okay, yes, they are. They're serving the country, and thank God for that. But if they resigned tomorrow, there would be someone else in that position the following day, and life would go on. The president is not indispensable, and no one who works under the president or in our entire government is indispensable. And the day that anyone in our government becomes indispensable is the day that we've lost it, the day that this country ends. No one, nothing is indispensable. The idea of America is indispensable. And unfortunately, we do have a political party sort of trying to cram that into a sack and throw it in the river. And we have another political party that doesn't seem to know what the hell it wants to do. But as far as these witnesses, this hearing, and Ukraine, I wish them all well. But they are not my heroes. They are not, oh, did you get the acting Ambassador Taylor rookie card out of your diplomat pack from Topps baseball cards? No kid has ever said that. Those cards don't exist, although after this thing, maybe there's some money in it. Why not? But no, people will forget them as quickly as they had them thrown in their face. And it turns out that not that many people are watching as this crap is being thrown in their face, which is shaping up to be a big problem for the Democrats. Listen to how the human potato over at CNN described the, well, let's say the lack of ratings. He's trying to polish a turd here. And if Brian Stelter knows anything, it's how to polish a turd. He does do whatever you can do with what he's got when he looks in the mirror in the morning. The headline of his piece after the first day of hearings were a bust is ratings for first impeachment hearings show healthy interest and a serious partisan divide. Oh, a healthy interest. And you go, oh, wow, healthy interest. So what does that mean? In a nation of 330 million people, how many people watched? 13 million. 13 million out of a nation of 330 million. You don't have to be a math whiz to recognize that that on a percentage basis is pretty slow. It's pretty low. It's pretty nothing. It's not really what you want. I mean, what was it? 87 million people watched the Beatles on Ed Sullivan in 1964. And that was in a nation of about, what, 200 million people? So you begin to see that the interest perhaps is not quite as large as the cable networks would like it to be. And I suspect, and this is me going out on a limb here, but it's unlikely, but I think would make good business sense, that since all three broadcast networks have been preempting their daytime shows for this, and getting really not much in return, I suspect that the affiliates will start grousing about, hey, you know, we're losing a lot of ad revenue here. We don't really want to give up all of this. You know, people want their Judge Judy or whatever the hell is on daytime TV now. So why don't you just leave this for the cable networks? And I suspect as we inch into week two of this show trial, maybe by week three, the networks, the broadcast networks, will stop doing this, stop carrying it live. CNN story, Stelzer's story, on the first day of the televised impeachment hearings against President Trump, the two most popular TV news channels were the two most closely associated with political parties. Fox News, the favorite amongst Trump and other Republicans, had the single biggest audience during the daytime hearings. It averaged 2.9 million viewers at any given time. And then next was MSNBC, averaging 2.7 million. He goes through the history of it. Fox generally has about 1.5 million. CNN or MSNBC has about a million during the day. And he tries to use that. This shows that there is major, major interest in this. Says the ratings contradict claims from some of the president's allies, including one of his sons, Eric Trump, who said that said on Fox News that no one is watching it, no one cares. Clearly, lots of people care enough to tune in. They also wanted to see the spin later in the day, and he goes through about how Fox dominated that as well. What's interesting is ABC, CBS, and NBC, the broadcast networks, which have a much larger reach, potential audience. Everybody pretty much with a TV can watch them. You don't have to have cable. They only averaged about 2 million viewers each. And actually, that's not entirely true. That was ABC and CBS. NBC only had 1.67 million at their height. How pathetic is that? You're going to tell me that these numbers, which are about the same as the Mueller hearing, they actually are the same, 13 million, as the Mueller hearing, show widespread interest in this? Wouldn't the ramping up of the charges and the penalties and the consequences of that mean a subsequent ramping up in the audience interest? I mean, you're getting you're not even getting 10% of the American people interested in this. You're not even getting 5% of the American people interested in this. And you're telling me that, well, there's a huge, huge interest in this. No, human potato, there is not. And this is starting to worry Democrats. They were hoping, they were thinking that with every channel on the dial, NPR, PBS, C-SPAN, locals, all is streaming, you would have thought this is going to end up meaning that more American people will see this, and then people will start to wake up. Then people will come around to our side. Well, not really. CNN again, headline, top Democrats privately concede major shift in public opinion on impeachment is unlikely. Unlikely. What? House Democrats are publicly holding out hope that historic impeachment hearings will persuade a vast majority of the American public that President Donald Trump committed high crimes and misdemeanors, but privately, many acknowledge that is unlikely to happen. In a private meeting this week, oh, the poor dears, don't you feel sorry for them? In a private meeting this week, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and her top lieutenants were skeptical about the process prospects of a dramatic shift in opinion, even as public opinion hearings began, according to multiple sources familiar with the matter. The upshot, sources said, Democrats need to move forward with impeachment proceedings even if the politics are murky, noting that even during Richard Nixon's presidency, most of the public was divided until soon before he was forced to resign. Oh, they really keep living in the past. The difference between the Nixon impeachment inquiry and this show trial is Nixon had engaged in a cover-up. Crimes were committed. There was evidence of it in the form of tapes. There were audio recordings of all of it. That was a problem for Richard Nixon. Also, John Dean, who was guilty of quite a few of those crimes, but is now a liberal darling and an MSNBC contributor, trotted out to try and give it the stamp of official history. John Dean essentially turned state's evidence in order to lessen his own prison sentence. So you had somebody on the inside. You had somebody who had committed crimes saying, I wasn't the only one who committed these crimes, and going from there. That, again, is significantly different from this case where everybody involved, including the so-called victim, or should I say everybody directly involved, including the so-called victim, the president of Ukraine, are saying there was no crime. There was no problem. I have no idea what you're talking about. You're making this up and you're making a fool of yourself. See the difference there? But they keep dining out on it. It's the only reason, by the way, to have Carl Burns. Why you wake up Carl Bernstein, open his coffin, and drag him out to the set of CNN for any other reason than to try in desperation to associate this phone call with Watergate, a physical break-in, a burglary of the Democratic National Committee headquarters with a phone call between two world leaders. Yes, they're exactly the same thing. It's insane. It's hilarious. Now, in the midst of all of this and lost on apparently all of these journalists, is the fact that there is lacking any evidence. If there is any evidence of a crime, nobody involved in all of this is alleging, or nobody directly involved, I guess I should say, has any proof whatsoever of a crime. Nothing. It's all hearsay. It's all secondhand, thirdhand conjecture. Somebody told me this, somebody told me that. To put a fine point on it, I played for you Ambassador Taylor last week on Thursday's show saying he can't testify to, all he can do is tell you what other people have told him. So for good measure, let's go to Marie Yovanovitch's testimony, her opening statement. Let's see, maybe was she the one who's going to bring some firsthand information, a smoking gun with her, or at least a gun that was slightly elevated above room temperature? Turns out, not so much.
I'd like to briefly address some of the factual issues I expect you may want to ask me about, starting with my timeline in Ukraine and the events about which I do and do not have firsthand knowledge. I arrived in Ukraine on August 22nd, 2016, and left Ukraine permanently on May 20th, 2019. There are a number of events you are investigating to which I cannot bring any firsthand knowledge. The events that predated my Ukraine service include the release of the so-called Black Ledger and Mr. Manafort's subsequent resignation from President Trump's campaign, and the departure from office of former Prosecutor General Viktor Shokin. Several other events occurred after I returned from Ukraine. These include President Trump's July 25th, 2019 call with President Zelensky, the discussions surrounding that phone call, and any discussions surrounding the delay of security assistance to Ukraine in the summer of 2019.
That should have been the entirety of her testimony. That should be, Republicans have no questions for her, Democrats have no questions for her, because she can't answer questions about either of the topics in which Republicans and Democrats are interested. Did you notice that? Look, I was all that Hunter Biden crap happened before I was there, and all the corruption into Burisma, that was before I was there, and Joe Biden pressuring, that was long before I was there, and I was gone by the time this phone call even happened. So I wasn't even in town that month for either one of those things. That should have been the end of it. Yet we were inundated with 6 full hours of earnest questions and praise and kissing her butt, going, oh, you're such a wonderful diplomat. And she was upset about how she was removed, and the phrase smear campaign was used left and right. And maybe there was a smear campaign used against her. And if there was, it was stupid because it was completely unnecessary. And I think most of the damage, all of the blows that I've seen landed on Donald Trump are self-inflicted wounds. It just seems like if you want somebody else over there, if you don't like the ambassador, you don't have to play a game of bad-mouthing them and trying to sully their reputation. Just get rid of them. Just say, hey, come back, you're out. And the explanation is, I want someone else in there. As president, that is my right. Get out. Game over. Done and done. But I don't even know that I believe any of that crap, because these people lie so much, so often, so directly, and so blatantly, that I suspect there's more to this story. In fact, I know there's more to this story, but the Republicans didn't want to go after it because they didn't want to be seen as mean, going after this poor woman whose reputation had been sullied, so on and so forth. So they let that lie stand. And they just tried to discredit everybody involved in other ways, other creative ways. But I tell you, it was a waste. It was a complete waste of time. And now you begin to see why Democrats are going, yeah, I don't really think this is working out very well. And now you see why I think that by the end of this week, maybe the beginning of next week, Democrats, they can't stop. They can't stop this process. You can't. You know, there's all sorts of problems with politicians over-promising and under-delivering, but you can't promise this. You can't promise the people that you've conditioned to believe that impeachment is just around the corner will finally rid ourselves of Donald Trump. You can't pull out on that. You can't blue ball them like that. They have to go forward, and they'll probably, I mean, unless there's some major revelation, I don't really see where this thing goes. The people who were not involved are all saying there was some shady stuff going on there, but I didn't see any of it. And according to what we know so far about the people who were involved, all the people who were involved say there was nothing going on, and those people are wrong. So I'm not really sure how Democrats pull up from this nosedive. It's kind of to the point where it's funny watching them try to figure it out. Meanwhile, they're running around trying to cover their old tracks. Remember the story about Ukraine in the past and Politico, about how Ukraine was trying to make up for supporting Hillary Clinton and working with the Clinton campaign to defeat Trump? Remember that? The headline in Politico is Ukrainian efforts to sabotage Trump backfire. Well, Politico had to go back and try and undercut their own story, to kneecap their own story. They have another one just from a couple of days ago. Headline, Ukraine didn't interfere in 2016, Trump officials testified. Now, the Trump officials were the witnesses against the president. I'm not really sure how official Trump they are, but it completely and totally contradicts the earlier Politico story. Two top officials who served on President Donald Trump's National Security Council staff testified they had seen no evidence that the Ukraine government interfered in the 2016 election, contradicting a claim that the president has made in public and in private. The former officials, Fiona Hill and Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, were responding to questions from House impeachment investigators who released depositions of them on Friday. The testimony, this is my favorite part, The testimony undercuts a conspiracy theory that has been pushed by Rudy Giuliani, the president's personal lawyer, as he sought to upend the intelligence community's conclusion that Russia sought to help Trump defeat Hillary Clinton in 2016. Now, I love that they're calling it a conspiracy theory, and it's just claims made by the president when, if you go back to January 11th, 2017, Politico's own story. This is where the president gets the information from. This is where Rudy Giuliani gets the information from. The pages of Politico, the very same news outlet that is now saying there was, I don't even know where this story comes from. It's crazy talk. Back then, just as a reminder, a little bit of the original story that, by the way, well, I'll tell you in a second. Donald Trump wasn't the only presidential candidate whose campaign was boosted by officials from a former Soviet bloc country. Note the lack of qualifiers. That is the entirety of the sentence. That is the entirety of the lead. Ukrainian government officials tried to help Hillary Clinton and undermine Donald Trump by publicly questioning his fitness for office. They also disseminated documents implicating a top Trump campaign or top Trump aide in corruption and suggested they were investigating the matter, only to back away after the election. Again, you see the lack of qualifiers there. All declarations of facts, all because they did their research. Yet now Politico, the paper, the very news site in which this story ran, is saying there is no evidence. Nobody even knows where this crackpot idea comes from. I tells you, it's totally crazy. Normal people with nothing to hide don't have to go back and rewrite their past. They don't have to rewrite their history. They don't have to deny what everybody knows and what everybody says. But then again, we're not dealing with normal people. We're dealing with Democrats. Democrats who, after the first day of hearing, this is NBC News, their little information, their tweet, the first two witnesses called Wednesday testified to President Trump's scheme, but lacked the pizzazz necessary to capture the public's attention. Isn't that nice? Isn't that lovely? Meanwhile, Rasmussen did a poll. They're checking out how the American people think and feel about this mess. And again, we're finding a situation where not only is it not good for the Democrats, it's not particularly good for our little friends in the media either. Rasmussen reports most voters didn't expect fair play from the media. Most voters don't expect fair play from the media when it comes to news coverage on the Democrats' impeachment attempt. 53% of likely U.S. voters think most reporters are trying to help impeach Trump when they talk or write about the impeachment efforts. Isn't that interesting. Just 32% believe most reporters are simply interested in reporting the news in an unbiased manner. 8% say most are trying to block President Trump's impeachment, which is kind of, where is this 8%? Where is that? But yeah, the wheels aren't falling off impeachment. You never know. You never, ever know. But they are wobbly. Some of those bolts that they're holding the tires on are starting to show signs of stress. They're starting to loosen. There's problems coming. If they don't produce something this week, and I mean something dramatic, I don't know how they don't lose an impeachment vote. Because you got to remember, the impeachment inquiry vote that we had was supported by a large number of Democrats who'd won in purple states that Donald Trump carried by quite a bit. They were reluctant to do it, but they were convinced to do it over time, a long sustained attack by the AOC wing of the party. So they agreed, all right, we will agree to go along with the investigation. Now that they keep drilling these dry holes and coming up with nothing, and they still want to go forward with a vote, with an actual impeachment vote in the House of Representatives, I don't see how they can possibly go for that. I don't see how they can possibly do that. Yet, there's going to be a lot of pressure on them. So it's self-preservation, or do you try to appeal to people who don't live in your district and will never vote for you under any circumstances? Because the people doing the pressuring are pressuring people who, people like AOC, would support a primary challenger of. Sooner or later, the fractures in the Democratic Party are going to reach the point of no return if they don't come up with something. Speaking of Trump derangement syndrome and human potatoes, now, even though nobody was talking about human potatoes, there was a Trump derangement story going around, Trump derangement syndrome story going around the interwebs. And of course, it made it to Drudge because Matt Drudge is now a part of the problem. He really does not like Donald Trump. On my radio show, I talked to Ann Coulter last week and I asked her, I said, what's up with Matt? And his seeming change in tone, because there was no bigger pro-Trump pusher early on than Matt Drudge. Well, she said something along the lines of, you know, maybe he's sick of all the broken promises or whatever, which made it sound like he's on the same page as Anne. It is, you know, seal the border and nothing else matters. Who cares? Everything else is irrelevant. I want this done. Well, the big story was that a anti-Trump conservative radio host was fired by the radio station mid-show for being critical of Donald Trump. And you think, oh, well, first of all, having worked in radio and working in radio, they can fire you for whatever reason they want, whenever they want. It's up to them. But this is the way the Washington Post put it. A radio host criticized Trump on the air. He was fired mid-show, he says. Ooh. A host from a conservative radio station in Denver said he was abruptly fired after criticizing President Trump during his weekly radio show on Saturday morning. Sounds like a huge hit radio show on Saturday mornings. Craig Silverman, a former local prosecutor, was replaying parts of a 2015 interview with Roger Stone, blah, blah, blah. Silverman said the station's program director came through the door and without warning and told him, "You're done," according to the Denver Post. The host added that he intended to spend the last hour of his show discussing how toxic Trump is in Colorado and arguing that congressional Democrats were making a strong case in the impeachment inquiry. Ooh, it was a big, big story. And Brian Stelter, the human potato, was right on it. Brian Stelter, you know, is very, very interested in all media stories except the one that he hasn't mentioned at all, which is the ABC News cover-up of the Epstein story that they had. Brian Stelter, his job is to report on media and scandals in the media and issues in the media, hasn't mentioned that once, not one single time, not even in a tweet, but he's all over a local radio station in Denver firing someone for what the host says was because he was saying anti-Trump things. Now, this was all being pitched as conservative station fires host, ooh, conservative talk show host, because he's anti-Trump. It's all about Trump and those damn, you know, the Republican purge is underway. And then you scroll down. In the Washington Post story, let's see, how many paragraphs do you have to go? There's 11. You have to go to the 11th paragraph. Now, it's conservative this and conservative that. You go to the 11th paragraph and you get this from the Washington Post, which kind of changes things a little. Silverman, a former deputy district attorney in Denver, calls himself an independent with conservative and liberal views. What? I thought it was a conservative station chock full of conservative hosts, and this conservative attacked Trump, so thereby illustrating that even conservative radio stations will not tolerate differing opinions on the president. But no, he's got conservative and liberal views. On his show and in his interviews, he has said he casts has cast more ballots for Republicans than for Democrats, voting for Mitt Romney in 2012 and Trump in 2016. Well, nobody should have voted for Barack Obama the second time. He was proven a complete fraud and liar, and the economy was in the toilet. The Trump election was, the alternative was Hillary Clinton. So what are you going to do? Yet somehow this is very, very important that he's a conservative on a conservative station, even though he identifies himself as something. There aren't many conservatives who say, yeah, I'm about 50-50. I got some conservative views and some liberal views. I assume that since they don't go back to 2008, that he voted for Barack Obama. I mean, he was running against John McCain, so six of one, half a dozen of another. And then the Post story continues. This is paragraph 12. Now, you have to read this far to get this information, because otherwise the narrative is conservative station fires conservative host for being insufficiently loyal to Donald Trump. He launched his show on KNUS in 2014 after spending a decade on the radio at Giant Clear Channel, where he co-hosted a politics talk show. Now, this guy's been in radio forever. I've never heard of him before now. Now, granted, I don't follow the industry, but anybody who's successful, you kind of hear about, because that's, if I drive across the country, that's all I do is listen. Now I listen to podcasts and audiobooks, but back then I was listening to AM talk radio. It says, in an interview that year with the website Complete Colorado, a reporter asked Silverman whether he was surprised that the station hired him given his, quote, liberal and libertarian viewpoints. Silverman says he wasn't. Now, it's very interesting, again, because all the couching is conservative station fires conservative host for being insufficiently in love with Donald Trump. Yet, paragraphs 11 and 12 of the Washington Post story paint a different picture. Enter, ladies and gentlemen, the human potato. On Sunday, Johnny on the Spot, again, who hasn't mentioned ABC News and their scandal with Jeffrey Epstein one single time, because he's buddies with all these people, and they hate Project Veritas because James O'Keefe has exposed their fraud, and they want to pretend that he does nothing. He doesn't exist. The human potato on his show, ironically called Reliable Sources, had on the aforementioned Craig Silverman, the former district attorney and fired radio host. I want to play a little bit of the potato's, in the potato's introduction. I won't stop it. I've already made the commentary. You will hear the human potato make the case that this station has some explaining to do. Now, they can fire this guy for whatever reason they like at any moment they like, as anybody on air at CNN can be fired or can be removed from air for whatever reason CNN's management like. They were insufficiently anti-Trump or something. Brian knows this. He's dumb, but he's not stupid. So in the introduction, he again points out they have some explaining to do. Nothing about ABC News.
So what just happened in Denver? Salem Media's radio station 710 KNUS in Denver has some explaining to do. On Saturday morning, a prominent Colorado lawyer, Craig Silverman, was hosting his usual Saturday morning show. Then all of a sudden, the show stopped. Management cut off the show when he was in the middle of it, and he was essentially canceled. His website for the show has now been removed. Now, he's got a day job. He loves being a lawyer. But this is intriguing because he says he was cut off for criticizing President Trump. And we know that Salem Media has pressured some other radio hosts to toe a pro-Trump line. That's been the direction of the business. So let's talk about what's going on in right-wing radio and what happens when you try to dissent.
Salem, by the way, has denied those allegations. But that doesn't matter to the human potato. He just goes with it. If it fits the narrative, he'll spew it because he only gets his information from his fellow liberals. And that's all the talk on the gossip cocktail circuit. But I love, let's talk about what's going on right-wing radio. Right-wing radio. Oh, it's just right-wing. Well, your guest coming on used to work in white right-wing radio, and he was a liberal and libertarian. So kind of blows it all to hell. Also, liberal radio doesn't get any listeners. It sucks. It's on radio stations you essentially have to be in the parking lot of in order to pick up on your AM dial. Their signal is so weak. That's because nobody wants to hear somebody whine and complain about how awful the country is all the time. Conservatives have a sense of humor, whereas liberals do not allow laughing because somebody somewhere is suffering and you cannot. How can you have any joy in life when somebody might not have any? You're hogging all the joy, you monsters. So the potato then introduces Craig Silverman. When I first heard this clip, what he says is irrelevant, to be perfectly honest with you, although if memory serves me, he kind of contradicts the human potato's narrative a little bit. What I was most shocked by was not that this guy was fired, but was that this guy was ever hired in the first place, if he was in fact hired. A dirty little secret about a lot of radio, especially on weekend radio, is people pay for the time slots. You can just like you want to run an hour long commercial on your local radio station. If it's a talk station, it's probably a little different on a music station. You can go in there with however much money it costs to do that and do that. They'll sell you an hour of radio. They'll sell you an hour of radio a day. They'll sell you 3 hours of radio a day or 3 hours of radio on the weekend or an hour, however much you want. If you got the money, you can buy the time and then you're free to go out and sell all the commercials. And if you think that you got the stuff, you can front the money and then try and make it back on advertising. There are people who do that. It's kind of looked down upon, according to what I've heard in the rumor mill in the radio business. It kind of looks like a cheap way rather than a merit way, but I can tell you that merit really has no place in radio at all either. It's a joke. The whole thing is a joke. But when this guy started talking, this Craig Silverman, I immediately stopped and was shocked that he was ever on radio. It wasn't, this is going to sound horribly superficial, but I got to be honest. It wasn't what he said. It's his voice. I thought he had to be buying. I don't know this. I suspect this just because of his voice. And I can't imagine anybody listening to this voice. I can't, if ratings matter, I can't imagine anybody listening to his voice. Listen to the potato introduce Craig Silverman. And then a little bit of Craig Silverman's voice. It's kind of a dick thing to say, but could you imagine this coming at you for 3 hours on a Saturday?
Craig Silverman's with me now from Denver. Craig, so you were cut off, you believe, because you were criticizing the president?
Well, it's a little more complicated than that. I wrote a column expressing frustration about the things you were just speaking about. Well, about my colleagues would not address this impeachment hearing. They would not address the facts. And I wanted to do that. 3 hours every Saturday, I was covering the case. I had other media opportunities. I'm an independent contractor with Salem. And I took those. They were frustrated about that. I was frustrated that we couldn't talk about the facts of the impeachment case. And it all came to a head as I was excoriating Donald Trump on my show yesterday.
But who was saying that you couldn't talk about the facts of the case, about the impeachment?
Well, look, every host makes a decision about the content of their show. When you try to have a discussion, you come into words like sham, hoax, or let's talk about Horowitz, Huber, or Durham. I said, that's interesting. You can get plenty of that elsewhere. But on my show, we're going to talk about Ukraine and this impeachment hearing and the facts and what the president is saying that does not add up.
Of course, that voice, I feel awful saying it because my voice is not going to lull anybody into a nice sleepy slumber or anything like that. It's not. It's the stuff nightmares are made out of. But that one will cause you to wake up screaming in a cold sweat. You imagine that? Like, okay, well, we've got this, that, and the other thing. But what I find most telling, aside from his voice, again, it's a superficial world that we live in, and I recognize that, and I'm being a total jerk, and I recognize that as well. But I'm also telling you what I really think, and so that's what you sign up for. But what's telling is, so Brian Stelter is desperately trying to get him to say he was fired for being anti-Trump. If you notice, missing from what I played you is him saying he was fired because he was anti-Trump. It's kind of an important point, you know, considering it is the point that Brian Stelter was trying to make. Brian keeps tying it back. Yeah, but we were fired because of this. Well, it's more complicated than that. I was an independent contractor and they didn't like me doing other media. Presumably that means you he's probably doing something in another market or in the same market. Because in radio, they don't like it when you can, you know, if I'm in Maryland, if I want to fill in for another Maryland station, which would never happen, they wouldn't like that very much. If somebody wanted me to fill in for their radio show in Los Angeles, I could do that because the audiences are completely different. There's no confusion. There's no overlap. There's no nothing. Not a problem done and done. If I'm playing around in the own market, then that would be a problem for management. And they would, it sounds like whatever it was a problem for a while. And maybe they just had enough of it. But what he never says is I was fired because I wanted to rail against Donald Trump. Not even close to that. But that's the whole freaking story. So then Brian, the human potato, brings it back to, well, who said you couldn't talk about Donald Trump or say mean things about Donald Trump? And the guy says, no, you make each host sets the content of their own show, which I can vouch for is true. Now, I've had management be all whiny and go, more local, stop being so conservative. Why do you have to be so conservative? We need to get along with these Democrats and stuff. And I'm just not their guy in that case. But for the most part, you get to set your own agenda, your own show. And that's what he was doing. It didn't sound like anybody stopped him from doing that. But still, the story is this evil radio company, this right-wing radio company fired this guy because he went on a tirade against Donald Trump. And there he was with every opportunity in the world to say just that. And he didn't. Doesn't stop the narrative, but the truth, it seems, is something completely different. All right, enough about that because we're running long and I want to get some of these other things in here. Barack Obama, it's kind of funny, is pissing off all the wrong people on the left these days. He, at an event over the weekend, again came back and said that the American people aren't quite as liberal as the Democratic Party is. He said, quote, the average American doesn't think we have to completely tear down the system and remake it. And I think it's important for us not to lose sight of that. There are a lot of persuadable voters, and there are a lot of Democrats out there who just want to see things make sense. They just don't want to see crazy stuff. They want to see things a little more fair. They want to see things a little more just. And how we approach that, I think, will be important. Again, all the leaders in the Democratic primary, including his own vice president, have gone the full-blown social justice warrior. This country is fundamentally racist, and it needs to be destroyed. Even Barack Obama back in 2008, right before the election. So we're only 3 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America. And now he's recognizing that, hey, that's probably not the best electoral strategy, you know? Even, he continued, even when we push the envelope and we are bold in our vision, we also have to be rooted in reality and the fact that voters, including the Democratic voters and certainly persuadable independents or even moderate Republicans, are not driven by the same views that are reflected on certain, you know, left-wing Twitter feeds. He was speaking at the Democracy Alliance. It's a bunch of rich Democrats who raise a ton of money for the party. And he was being interviewed by Stacey Abrams, who ran on a platform. She ran on a radical left-wing platform. And when she lost by more than 50,000 votes the governorship of Georgia, she claimed that it was stolen from her, that she was robbed, that this was unfair, that it was racism that caused her to lose. All these disenfranchised voters and everything under the sun was to blame, except for the fact that she was a radical left-wing Democrat who could easily win a primary in the Democratic Party, but couldn't win a general election. In many ways, what she is what Barack Obama is warning about. It's kind of important, especially given the context that he's talking to the prime example of his warning. Will it be heeded? No. The same crowd that was offended that tweeting something is not activism and the cancel culture is bad, the same liberals that were very upset that Barack Obama had said that, are attacking Barack Obama over this. They can't rein it in. They're gone. They're too far gone. The only person I thought who could have reined in a little bit the Democratic Party, because Barack Obama's kind of pussyfooting around it. He'd have to give a serious, straight-up speech, and I don't think he wants to be that involved in the primary. But the only person who could have reined in the Democratic Party is Joe Biden. At the beginning, if he'd have come out and had his sister soldier moment and told the radical leftists, calling everything racist and everybody horrible, he said, calm down. This country is not evil and the people who disagree with us are not evil. We can disagree and still live together. If he'd have said that, I think he would have, a lot of his screw ups would have been forgiven. Not by the 40-50% of the Democratic Party that's absolutely bat manure crazy, but by the rest of them, and the rest of them would be enough to win, especially when you have 4,822 candidates running in the primary. But Joe decided to outwoke everybody else, and now the idea of being the adult in the room is somebody who needed an adult in the room while he was campaigning for president of the United States himself, Barack Obama. This will be interesting if Barack Obama keeps on throwing these little warnings out, because he is right, but he's also angering the people who are going to be responsible for protecting his legacy and for creating his legacy, rewriting his legacy from what it really is into what he wishes it were. Be fun to watch in any event. So finally today, Colin Kaepernick. Oh, remember good old Colin Kaepernick. He was all set. He was a hero. He was of the left. He was banned from the NFL, they said. The NFL persona non grata. They want nothing to do with him because of politics and racism. He's had more chances than a number one draft pick, for God's sakes. It really has. He screws up. He was almost signed by the Ravens a few years ago, and then he tweeted out a picture of Ray Lewis and the owner of the Ravens, Steve Bisciotti, basically saying that Bisciotti was a slave owner and Ray Lewis was a house slave protecting him. It was embarrassing and racist and stupid, but it cost him his contract. Every time he comes close to getting a contract from an NFL team or some interest from an NFL team, he does something to make a complete ass out of himself. Well, the NFL gave him another chance. They'd set up a workout for him at a facility that is owned and operated by the Atlanta Falcons. And they invited all the teams. A bunch of teams were going to send representatives down there. And all the other teams were going to be sent video of the workout that they were going to put him through, see if he could still throw a ball, so on and so forth. Well, at the last minute, Colin Kaepernick, who had spent the last 3 years, saying, you give me a chance, I'll go anywhere at any time and show people that I can play, I'm ready. He decided not to show up. He decided to hold his own sort of tryout, I guess you could say, at a public field. He says it's because he wanted the media out there. He's very concerned that the NFL wouldn't give him a fair shake. They might edit the videos or not send it out or whatever the hell his problem was. It's deeply rooted in paranoia and racism, which isn't surprising considering it's Colin Kaepernick, but it's kind of interesting that every time he's close, he sabotages it. It's more likely because he recognizes that he doesn't have it anymore. He's 33 years old. There are plenty of other quarterbacks out there who are available, who are much younger, who are much quicker. Now, it's funny because the little pseudo workout that he did, a couple of teams did manage to make it. And it's, you know, there's footage of him throwing passes like, oh, he's dropping back. And now he's throwing a football to a guy who's wide open, not being covered. And he's able to throw an accurate pass when there's literally nobody else on the field rushing him. I'm not sure how effective that is, especially when given his track record in his career, when there are people on the field with him and it's not so good. So I hope that nobody will sign him. I suspect maybe some teams will consider it, but it's telling that he gets exactly what he wanted. Remember, he's told that he's run out of the game because of racism and his protesting of police officers and politics and blah, 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 and the NFL has been over backwards for him. Set up his own private tryout, and he doesn't show up. He's too good for it. I wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole attached to a 20-foot pole, but that's just me. Now, what I also find funny, and this will be about it for the show, he had film crews out there. Part of the reason he didn't want to go to the NFL thing is he wanted to have his own film crew there to document it, because, again, he thought that the NFL was going to screw him over by, I don't know, computer generating him sucking worse than he normally does, whatever it was. So he had his own film crew out there. And I bet dollars to donuts that footage of his workout will somehow find its way into a Nike commercial. I just suspect that's what it'll be. It's going to be, you know, ooh, you stick in there. You still got it, but nobody wants it. And you so on and so forth. You're still a hero in my books. They go on from there. That's what I think this was all about. To get some attention, to justify his $10 million deal with Nike, and to get really interesting and usable B-roll for any future Nike ads. The whole thing, Colin Kaepernick as a person and as an activist, is nothing more than a marketing gimmick. They can have him. And Nike is really just terrible, if you think about their influence in the NBA and what the NBA has become. And part of the kowtowing of the NBA to China is because of the pressure that Nike puts. China puts a lot of money into the NBA, and so does Nike. And Nike puts a lot of money into the NFL, so they bend over backwards for a racist, washed-up, has-been, never really was, like Colin Kaepernick. It's such a scam. It's such a joke. I'm glad the wheels came off. The NFL is shocked that he didn't show up. It's unfortunate, blah, blah, blah. No, it's by design. Nobody was thinking about Colin Kaepernick. Nobody. Now the whole country's talking about Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick, the quarterback, is washed up, never was, is done. Colin Kaepernick, the brand, lives on thanks to playing the NFL like a fiddle. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. You can email me, Derek@DailyCaller.com. You can also email me there if you want to enter to win the signed copy of Jerome Hudson's book. If you don't mention that you want to win a signed copy of Jerome Hudson's book, you shall not be entered into the drawing. So make sure you do that, just so I know, because I don't want to email somebody randomly saying you won, and they said, how did I win? I didn't enter. So just take care of that. If you want to win, you got to enter. Just like the lottery, you got to play to win. I'll be back here tomorrow. We'll find out what happened, if anything, in the impeachment hearing, plus whatever other insanity happens between then and now. Welcome to another week. We're only a week away from Thanksgiving now, so you can almost smell that. I'll see you tomorrow.
Well, it's a little more complicated than that.